See myself, look, you're the chief Jew. Yeah, you know all about Jews, who they are and where they are. We need the names and addresses, roughly, and telephone numbers. I realize you may not be eager to tell us, but if you don't, we'll find out anyway. It'll just make our labor a little easier if you do tell us. In as a reward for which, we shall allow you and 57 other persons to escape. Let's assume the situation is occurring now, and you're in that position now. There are four choices you can make. You can say, I'm not playing your game, nothing for me. They shoot you dead, and that's the end of you. Possible way out. Or you can commit suicide. Same sort of thing, your conscience is clear. Or you can warn the Jews of what's coming, say yes, I'll tell you, and tell them what's going on, hoping some of them might escape. Not much likely because the town is ringed round. And so just still, you do your best, you tell them at least. Which doesn't help them much. Or you can do, you can escape with 47 or 53 people chosen by you. So it's called playing God. Including your family, friends, obviously. You choose the one you want. Now a man did do that. Called?
That man in Hungary.
The man in Hungary, what's his name?
Brandt.
Paper this morning. Yeah. No, it wasn't Brandt who did it. It's the other man who did it.
The other one. It's all in the Sunday Telegraph.
I'll tell you what happened. He did get out. And he went to Palestine with them. And one of the relations of people whom he left behind, who were exterminated, accused him of murder. At least of conniving at murder, by condemning these people to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he sued for libel.
Yes, this famous case.
Yes, he was killed.
And he was sued for libel. And the first court found for against him.
Mm-hmm.
But the second court, he appealed, mm-hmm. found for him. And in the end, they found for him. Then the original man who libeled him shot him dead.
Mm-hmm.
From a television.
He did that famous train. He took out 900 or 1,000 people.
It could well be.
There were quite a few.
Yes, more or less 1,000 or 40. But I mean, the principle is the same.
Kastner.
It was all in the Sunday.
Kastner is right. Kastner is his name.
The whole story.
Recently.
Yes.
Yesterday.
Kastner, Kastner, or something. That's his man's name.
Yeah.
And he was shot dead.
There's one train.
That's his man.
Yeah.
Well, that understands all the details of that story. Beginning to end, it's all quite clear what happened. Well, Hannah Arendt lectured these people, saying these people should have done, should not have done. She knows what they should have done. They should have died or not died. Whatever it is. And I thought that was absolutely monstrous. My solution, if you ask me, what should happen, is that anything these people do is all right.
Yes.
You can't condemn them for anything.
No, absolutely.
The alternatives
they're
are
the
intolerable. That's not what morality is invented to solve.
Mm.
Whatever they did is permissible.
Mm.
I did say it's very permissible. We're in no position to condemn people in that situation for anything they do.
Mm.
You see? It's like condemning people who are tortured for giving names.
Mm.
If they do, they do. You may not respect them, but under torture, they might have, you might do it yourself. The idea of condemning people like that is a form of intolerable moralism, of a very arrogant kind. And that's what she's guilty of. So what? Then all the other works I looked at, the one on the American Revolution, which everyone agreed was no good at all, that's all. But and then her philosophy, if you look at her writings, you see, the thing about her, I'll finish one second. Have it gone. We must go to the end. There's no logical connection between her sentences. There's no because or therefore at any point. It's just this free metaphysical meditations.
One damn thing after another.
Yes.
Mm.
Well, that's my case.
But
Mary McCarthy adored her.
Parents,
in every way, I mean, totally devoted to her. Physically, morally, I mean, worshipped her. For some reason. I have to concede it. And I did it through the whole thing. The planetary supplement was a little competition. But what is the most overestimated and underestimated book, in your opinion? So I said, well, the most underestimated is a book by Maurice Baring called Tinker's Leave, which is about the Manchurian War.
Yeah. In a minute they're going to come down if you
nobody
can take
it. It's very, very good.
About
a lot of journalists and Manchurians talking to each other. That's what it's wonderful. Nobody's read it since. That's the most overestimated. I said,
The human condition.
The human condition. She's dead by then.
Yes.
Although I might not have said it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want to insult her. fabricate. I then received a letter from Mary McCarthy in Paris.
Oh, yes.
Saying your opinion of her was reciprocated. So I then, all right, so then I replied and I said, perhaps we were both right. She then asked permission to publish this that I didn't want.
Yes.
For the private communication.
Yes. Yeah.
She wanted to have a little item somewhere.
Yeah.
That was kind of a proper answer. Yes, you see.
Oh, as
she's a bit noir, I agree. I don't have many. For some reason I thought sort of lecturing people.
Oh, yeah.
On how to behave.
Yeah.
Particularly for your
well, what I found interesting about this is an episode that you may have forgotten, which is that where we first made contact more than 10 years ago was when I appeared on the BBC to denounce a play by Jim Allen, a Trotskyist writer, which was essentially about the same theme, in which the Jews are lectured for not resisting their fate more energetically for collaborating with the Germans in their own destruction.
And the Zionists were allowed to go, and non-Zionists weren't.
Yes, and at which point I said, you know, this just wouldn't do.
No, no.
At which point you wrote me a letter, at which point our friendship began. Yeah. So I feel in some sense that you're going to start.
That's how it started.
Yeah.
That's, I didn't know. That's how it started. I remember that place.
That's true.
It made all of us, and then in the end wasn't put on.
Yes.
It was Lord Goodman or somebody.
What was the
play? Called theatre.
Yeah, it was called the Royal Court.
Remember.
That's right. I thought they were wrong. I thought he ought to put on. All the Jews I talked to were very pleased.
The one that was cancelled. That
I thought
was
censorship wasn't right.
Hmm.
I mean, it could be denounced, but not suppressed.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
As privates, which is all they could be. I wasn't going to promote them. For 30 years. So the usual conscription probably occurred for 8 years, 7 years.
For 30 years?
Well, that kind of period,
yeah.
40, in some enormous period. They would become Russified. And they would become good Russian citizens. They would be cut off from the Jewish community, in other words, but entirely be in some regiment where they wouldn't be Jews. He didn't want to baptize them. He thought that was wrong. Didn't want to force them to become Christians. For some reason, he held his hand about that. He might have tried to, but he didn't. And
this
then
the 1830s.
Or 30s, 40s. Well, so, I mean, Nicholas I may have gone on after him, but I mean, that's when it began. And if they could do that then, they'd be given plots of land, which Jews were not allowed to own. They'd be settled in little colonies and be retired soldiers.
And that's why they're called cantonists.
Farmers. And then the cantons were the places where they had to be settled. And this was done. They weren't conscripted in no way because they concealed themselves.
Yeah.
They didn't want that. Therefore, they were kidnapped by his officer, soldiers. And they would be seized.
They were press-ganged, as it were.
They were press-ganged, exactly so. Exactly what I mean. But during the Seder service, when all Jews are together, suddenly the door would open and the agents come in and seize them by force. They weren't maltreated. But
Did they serve in separate units, or were they
assimilated? No, they were assimilated. No, no. The idea was to assimilate them. No, not separate units. But they were scattered all around the place. But they had to be in for a very long period, at the end of which they would be treated much better than the Jews. The Jews in general had disabilities. They did not have disabilities. They were treated like ordinary retired privates.
And
who could be settled on agricultural settlements, be allowed to have farms, and whatever it is, you see, have their own farms and produce and live ordinary lives.
But only after they survived 30
after
years.
After they survived,
yes. Yeah.
We see, I know quite a lot of them. Quite a lot did survive. They didn't commit suicide, they took it on the chin more or less, you think. Now, these families, they knew were Jews, they knew some, they preserved their religion, they knew some, vaguely some Hebrew, but much less than the others. They're much more Russified. She is the daughter of one of these people.
Yes.
In Rostov-on-the-Don. Which is otherwise not a very Jewish neighborhood.
Right.
You see? And therefore, when, for example, I used to go to this, you know what I mean by the Seder ceremony?
Yes.
The Passover thing. Last Supper, in fact.
Yes.
Forget what it is. Relics of the Last Supper. in with Weizmann, which I did at least twice, three times I left. She was there, she didn't answer in Hebrew, sat there, absolutely rigid, completely unlistening, but now and then softened and sang a Russian song, which these people did at their theaters because they had very little Hebrew.
Yes.
They remained Jews in a marginal way.
Yes.
They preserved something. They knew they were Jews, they weren't Christians, they knew each other, but they were sort of, the only language they really knew was Russian. They didn't talk Yiddish.
Yes.
You see, that's her origin. I'm only giving you this lectureette.
But does that then give you a special kind of, or does she then sense in you a special kind of affinity, in the sense that you're a Russian Jew as
oh,
well?
That, no, yes. It's absolutely. I'll tell you how that happened. The point about her was she was not interested in Jews, in general. She was very snobbish. She wanted to get on with all the grand people he met and grand people in general. She was completely detached. Zionism, well, she couldn't help that, because that was his life.
Yes.
But she fell in love with him physically, as a man.
Yes.
She took no interest in Zionism as such. Mm-hmm. I mean, she behaved respectably, because she was his wife, she had to entertain the people he had to entertain, go to the parties he had to organize, but she did a minimum. And the Zionists didn't like her. Because it's clear that she looked down on them, didn't really like them very much.
Yes.
And what she liked was upper-class English persons whom the political efforts of Weizmann brought her in touch with. They admired him and couldn't bear her.
But
in fact,
does that mean
it was not success.
Does that mean
but she didn't know that.
Does that mean the Seifs and the Samuels
well, that's the
looked
people
down on her?
They didn't, no. She looked down on them.
Yes.
They didn't look down on her. She was very ladylike.
Yes.
Very well dressed. She behaved like a sort of princess.
Yes.
There's no question of populism there.
Yes.
See, he was a, in the temple. See, and he was just like a peasant leader or something. No. She dressed well, and she had a sort of rather artificial English accent copied from such upper class persons as she met. Whereas he talked sort of rather demotic sort of English.
Yes.
And but she remained in love with him throughout. That's what kept it together.
Mm.
And I remember Lady Salisbury. No, not Lady Salisbury. Lady Harlick, who was one of David Cecil's sisters.
Mm-hmm.
She was Cecil by birth.
Mm-hmm.
She was Salisbury's daughter. Saying to me, you know Dr. Weizmann, don't you? I think he's a wonderful man. Very, very impressive, isn't he? Extraordinary when I met him. I really was deeply impressed. Something rather wonderful about him. I'm sure I knew him better. And he was, do you know his wife at all? So I said, yes. She's, I found her rather tiresome.
In other words, she was rejected by the very people she aspired to be
exactly so.
Accepted by.
Exactly so. But she got on perfectly well with his rich friends, I mean, the thieves and all that.
Yes.
I mean, she was a good terms with them.
Yes.
Because, you see, after all, they gave a lot of shares to Weizmann, which is what he lived on.
Oh, really?
He was financially independent for two reasons, on the lecture on Weizmann. One was the patent of the thing he invented in the First World War.
Oh, really?
In the First World War, he was a chemist.
That's right.
In Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
And he, what was being looked for was ways of producing, bombs or something, you know, weapons of war of that sort. And he patented something which, out of fir cones, I think. Children are made to collect fir cones. Maybe apples and pears as well, but anyhow, that kind of thing. These things were chemically treated in such a way as then to produce something like acetone.
Yes.
If that's the right word.
Uh-huh.
It could be the wrong word, but that's what I mean. And that was a substance which went into explosives.
Uh-huh.
And made an enormous difference.
Uh-huh.
So, and he had a patent. And the patent yielded money.
All right.
You see? And there's a mythological story that Weizmann did, which he never denied, but didn't happen, which was that Lloyd George said to him, end of the war, Dr. Weizmann, you've rendered some singular services to the government, which is true. He didn't know Lloyd George. He was taken up
yes.
as an important inventor.
Yes, yes.
He was known to have this political fad. And that was completely ignored. You see, and you've done one great service. Would you like a title? What kind of, you see, we wish to honor you. somewhere. He could have become a knight quite easily on the strength of this. He the literature said, no, no, I want to learn from my people. Well, it's a noble story and does him great credit, except I don't think it happened. But I think when it was put to him, he didn't deny it.
Yes.
It's rather like my third cousin in New York, who was called the Messiah by his followers. He didn't say he was, but he didn't say he wasn't. Man just died.
Yeah.
We saw in the papers.
Yeah, Schneerson.
Yes, he's my third cousin. But I wouldn't go to see him. He did invite me.
Really?
I hated the whole thing so much.
Yes.
I didn't want to have anything to do with it.
What? Anyway. Now, there's correspondence.
So Mrs. Weitzman, now, the point is I met her. Now, how did I meet Weitzman? I think I better tell you that. Mm-hmm. He lived not very far from us in Kensington, but I didn't know him. My parents didn't know him. It was too grand, I think, for my family altogether. And I was a Zionist. I became one quite early in life, quite spontaneous. My father wasn't. My mother is another story. But anyway, I decided that there was something to it. In some way, I was self-converted. And I was a schoolboy. I didn't do anything about it, but I believed in it. And I thought about Druze, the Jewish history, the Druze in general. I've always been obsessed a little bit about the status of the Druze. I mean, I talk too much about them, in fact, according to my present wife. And she's a little
as
like
as opposed to his former wife.
Yeah.
As opposed
his
to
future
my future wife. Well, my present wife is a little like Mrs. Weitzman. It bores her in the end.
Yes.
They have all that much Jewish stuff stuffed on her. But at a certain point, before the war, I was picked up, I was a don here at All Souls, which slightly excited the Jewish community. They didn't know what it was, but they thought it was quite important. I was the first Jew there, and that would produce certain, made a certain impression, certain quarters. There was a man called Norman Bentridge, who was a very worthy British Jew. He was a lawyer by profession. He became Zionist of a very respectable, mild, liberal, pro-Arab kind. He became Attorney General in Palestine and was dismissed because no Arab was good enough to occupy a parallel position. It was self-attacked. You couldn't have Jews at positions to which Arabs couldn't attain.
Yes.
So he was removed and sent to Cyprus as the Attorney General. He was shot at by an Arab. I mean, there was an attempt to assassinate him, but didn't make him. He was a noble, boring, noble, idealistic man. He remained pro-Arab to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Always used to stay in Arab hotels and in a very deliberate sort of way.
And was he the one who introduced you to...
He made me a member of the Friends of the Hebrew University,
uh-huh.
of which he became professor of international law.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to have what's called a function in the house of Mrs.
Seif.
Seif.
Yes.
That's correct.
Which is in Park Lane.
In Park Lane. How do you know? I may have told you.
No, because this afternoon I tracked into correspondence in which this is described. It's
quite
in 39.
Correct. What?
39.
38 or 9, either. 39 it is.
Hmm.
Well, my wife found her. Who can tell? Yes. 39. And I was asked to second the vote of thanks to Mrs. Seif for allowing her to use this splendid room. And speeches were made by
Weitzman.
Walkup was the High Commission.
Yes.
Herbert Samuel.
And Weitzman.
And Weitzman. These three eminent persons.
Yes.
I know, it didn't matter what they said. And I had to produce my second. And all I could think of saying was, great, what do we think of Mrs. Seif? What do we think of? We think she's very, very rich.
Did you say that?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't, but that's what I long to say. Get some buzzing from my head. That's what I'm going to say.
And you had to kind of...
What do we think of her? When a name crops up, what is the connection? Money. Well, that was all right. I made my little speech, the best of my ability, and then Bentwich introduced me to Weitzman in the drawing room.
Yes.
Huge drawing room. And then he said to him that I was all settled and I was this and that and the other, and Weitzman then thought I might have some interest to him. This is 39, you're quite right. I hadn't met him before then. He invited me to tea, I think, at the Dorchester Hotel where he lived.
Yes.
And then I met his wife. And to her, I talked Russian.
Yes.
And she was delighted by this.
Yes.
Anyone who talked Russian was okay.
Yes.
And she took to me in a big way, which
in
helped.
A big way. Yes.
Which helped. And then he talked to me and decided to recruit me
yes.
into the movement in some way. Nothing much happened, but I mean, he then talked to me, and I talked to him, and we got on.
Yes.
And he was rather pleased by me, and
yes.
on the road we became friends.
Yes.
The rest of this is history.
One of the aspects of that history I wanted to ask you about, whether you have any memory of this at all, but in the Weizmann file...
Just before we get to
him,
Weizmann's last moments, you know what you actually did happen, what his last words were.
What were?
Very different from anything Mrs. Weizmann kind of communicated to me. He was his lungs were always in, thought he had to spit a lot.
Yes.
And he was died, I don't know what he died of, I think some congestion of lungs. Something like that. And the doctor who looked after him, quite an eminent German Jewish doctor, as you can imagine, said to him, "Can you spit?" And Weizmann said, "Nobody to spit at."
And that was it.
Those are the last words.
That must be an apocryphal story.
He's saying, no, this is a true story, because I get it from the doctor. And let me tell you, a very typical Weizmann.
Wonderful.
He was very cynical.
Yes.
Wonderful. Nobody to spit at. Spit? Who is that? Nobody to spit at. Marvelous. And very not
untimely.
He was rude, you see.
Yes.
And cynical and amusing.
Yes.
And pretty crude in that way. He sang some Hebrew sort of melody. I mean,
yes.
some kind
yes.
of
yes.
melody. He did do that. And she had no idea what it was and said, Heimtrick, as she called him. Is this Beethoven music? Beethoven. Inconceivable. I was present when that happened. Is it Beethoven? The relation between Weizmann and Beethoven is remote.
yes.
I
Whereas the relation to the Psalms would be much closer.
Well, not just a tune.
To a tune. Mm-hmm.
A
right.
tune.
Right.
A Jewish pious to which you'd
yes.
probably sing after grace meals or mm-hmm. on. Not a. Yeah, it could be a psalm.
Yeah.
But it was some little Jewish tune which he remembered, which came back to him after all these years, you see.
Yeah.
His father and so on.
Because all her letters to you in the late 40s are saying, why don't you come out? Why don't you come and live here? Why don't you throw in your lot with the
well,
Jewish state?
Well, because that's what he did. That's what he kept on demanding.
Yes.
He was not pleased with me.
Yes.
And I wouldn't.
Yes. Now, what did you say about that kind of stuff? Because in your letters you say...
I evaded it in some way.
Yeah.
You evade, yes. You evade.
I didn't know what I said.
Or you said you wanted to go back to Oxford and do what
this
you
is
do.
The truth. This is the truth. But I mean, I did. But certainly, when I did go, it's perfectly true. I was quite clear. You see, what happened was, I was sitting, apropos of this, I was sitting in the room in New College, talking to David Cecil. Telephone rang, and at the other end of the telephone was Mr. This is before the state. That one must have been 47. Before, just on the edge of things.
Yes.
Summer 47, probably during the height of the Anglo-Jewish War. I just came to stay with Weizmann.
Yes.
You know,
that's right.
I tried not to. Did I tell you that?
Yes, I know you didn't want to. The correspondence makes clear that you didn't want to.
You know that.
You kept falling sick and
you
stuff.
You know that. No, it wasn't that. I did use stratagems. That's what is really discreditable to me. I came back. I just come back.
You wanted to indicate that you've not got a visa. You've not got.
Well, you had a visa. You couldn't without.
Right.
That's exactly so. And it was awkward for me to ask one as a British official,
yes,
and I'll tell you, I did worse than that. Weizmann asked me to go and see him. I knew that when I arrived, if I arrived, he would have no idea why I'd come. It's part of great men to behave like that. They
yes.
summon you and then they totally forget. But you go all the same, because they are who they are.
Yes.
Well, I didn't tell me want to go. It would be summer 47. I did go in the end. And so then you had the war between Jews and English was going on. You certainly couldn't get into Palestine without a visa.
Mm.
Quite difficult.
Yes.
It was a kind of temporary wartime situation. And so then I wrote a letter to the Foreign Office on a not very clean piece of paper. Saying, "Dear sir, I would like to spend a holiday in Palestine. Can I have a visa? Yours sincerely." And then I got a tweeny hand.
I Berlin.
I knew what I'd get. And not written on New College paper.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And naturally, I got a printed notice.
Yes.
Saying, "Nobody was allowed to Palestine now. Would I give up all ideas of it?" which is what I wanted. I then wrote the vice president saying, well, I've applied for a visa, and then and the idea of trying to wheedle one, because I'd been a British official, is rather embarrassing. But it would have been if
yes.
I'd had to do that, this is the truth. Then a telegram arrived from the High Commissioner saying, you're invited to Palestine, come whenever you like. That cut off my retreat. Then I went in a ship which went very, very slowly.
Yes.
Panamanian boat going
to Marseille.
Marseille.
With your father.
With my father.
Yeah.
And we stopped in Athens.
Yeah.
And I went for stayed there for 2 days and went to a party of my colleague Patrick Riley, who was chargé d'affaires in Athens. Finally, we arrived in what was still Palestine.
Yes.
And
then you saw him there.
And I saw him there, yes.
Right.
That's right. 47.
And did he reproach you vividly about not coming to throw your lot in?
No, but I was telling you, after that, when I went back, I received a telephone call when I was sitting in my room in New College with David Sissel, and the man said, this is Moshe Charette.
Huh?
He was at that time the foreign minister, foreign aid of the Jewish agency.
Yeah.
There's no state. But this is a kind of embryonic organization with a view to a state. And then offered me a job. And I declined it there and then. And he said, well, look, I mean, if it's a question of pension, well, you'll have a very good one. So I said, no, not entirely good. No, I'm very sorry, I can't. And I knew I didn't want it, because I thought, quite apart from my desire to stay in Oxford, which was very strong.
Yes.
Supposing, I mean, I felt some guilt about this, naturally. If I went, I'd be torn to pieces. I could see the atmosphere in Jewish Palestine was of such kind as I could not exist in.
Right.
Neither then nor at any time. It was too violent, too crude, too febrile, and people always doing each other down, and doing each other in, too much competition.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Not at all dialect. I wanted to stay peacefully in Oxford. I knew I couldn't be able to do anything. I refused, just the Foreign Office offered me a job too. I refused that too, for different reasons.
On the subject of the Foreign Office, one of the things that's, there were two other questions I wanted to ask you about the Weizmann file. One of them was, during the war, whether when you saw him in 42 and 43 in Washington and New York, whether you were essentially a conduit to him of the state of mind of the Foreign Office.
No.
Or did you kind of cut yourself in
no,
two, really?
I didn't cut myself in two, but I didn't know what the Foreign Office felt about these things.
Uh-huh.
I never see, I wasn't, I didn't see old, I mean, I saw telegrams,
yes.
like anybody else. But I mean, there was nothing in the Foreign Office which could be reported to him. If there had been, I might have done.
Yes.
For all I know.
He wasn't coming through Washington, or you didn't
No, but there was nothing to tell him. What I mean is, I was not tempted. I mean, there was nothing during 42, 43, nothing, none of the telegrams of the Foreign Office had any relevance to Palestine.
Mm-hmm. And not in 44 and 45?
Well, there was one, I think there was one particular moment at which I probably did tell, I never told him anything, no. He never asked me.
Mm-hmm.
Never pumped me.
All right. Oh, that's interesting.
You see?
He didn't regard you essentially as his man inside.
No. Oh, certainly not. Not a bit. No, the Zionists tried to a bit, no. I'm trying to think of that connection. Zionists used to come and see me occasionally. Charette did toward the end. Nahum Goldman, those sort of people.
Yeah.
But they chatted to me. I had nothing to tell them.
Yeah.
There was nothing, there were no secret negotiations between Jews in the Foreign Office, or Zionists, or Arabs, which came my way.
Yeah. Wow.
So I wasn't torn to pieces by, should I tell him in a confidential admission, should I leak?
Yeah.
Didn't arise.
The other thing that came up today, which I thought was very interesting, is that he
said he talked to Halifax. If he came to the Foreign Office, he occasionally went to the embassy to see Halifax.
Yes.
Even that I didn't arrange. He never told me what transpired between them.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have to cut myself. I know what you mean by cutting yourself in half, but I didn't have to.
In 46, he gives a speech to the Zionists Congress in Basel, an important speech which includes a very, very strong denunciation of Jewish terrorism.
Yes, well.
And that paragraph he consciously attributes to your intervention in the speech. Do you have any memory of that?
None. But I'm sure, it's certainly my belief. I mean, it's correct interpretation of what I felt.
Yes. I mean, there's correspondence from Weizmann saying to someone else, Isaiah's put a very punchy paragraph about terrorism into the speech, and it's a very good paragraph.
I didn't know that put in the paragraph. News to me.
He scribbled something in.
News to me.
Right.
He may have derived it from me,
yeah.
But I would never write a paragraph and give it to him. I didn't say, why didn't you say this?
You scribbled stuff in the margin of the texts that are found in the Weizmann archives. It's clearly in your hand.
What? Of the speech?
Yes.
When I saw it afterwards, I didn't think I was responsible. I don't mind having it attributed to me.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
But you have no
But
memory.
In fact, I don't think it happened.
No.
I mean, I might well have. You began telling me, what should I say? Because, I mean, my views about terrorism were very strong.
Yes.
I became terribly anti-terrorist by that time. Yes. You know the story about me and Begin?
Yes, you didn't shake hands.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
For that reason.
Yes.
Because when I was 47, the Weizmann, it was going on. Mm. I was very horrified. Mm. Very, very. Mm. And I've been anti-terrorist ever since, against all terrorists in all countries.
Yes.
I wasn't always. I was rather sympathetic with Russian terrorists of the 80s and 90s. But
Nechayev and all those guys.
Well, not Nechayev, that was too much.
Oh,
no, that's too much. Nechayev's measure was horrible. Was
the guys
and
who blew up Alexander II.
That sort of thing. The revolutionaries.
Mm.
You see? But that ceased. When I saw terrorism in action, my views altered.
Yes.
On that particular topic. No, in the case of Weizmann, I don't think I'm conscious of ever supplying anything to him. I'll tell you what did happen, which is quite amusing, which is independent of this. All the telegrams arrived, Foreign Office apropos of Jews in Palestine, were always the same thing, saying, will you rub into the Jews for the white paper, which was the one excluding the Jews, will not be altered. No good they're agitating all these marches up and down Washington, and
yes.
Tremendous amount of fuss,
yes.
And getting rid of journalists.
Yes.
They were making quite a lot of successful propaganda. The Zionists in America at that time, and will not help them. Minds are made up. It irritated me rather, but I accepted it, and that is so. And I knew the Foreign Office was anti-Semitic anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a single Jew employed by the Foreign Office,
no.
Then or now, as far as I know. The same is true for the State Department. I mean, rich men become ambassadors in America, but that's a different thing.
Yeah.
You see? Then Dr. Nahum Goldman, who was a sort of Zionist gossip, quite an able, interesting, superior Zionist agitator and organizer, came to see me and chatted and said, you know,
what, give me the dates on this.
About 45,
uh-huh.
Not about, I mean, beginning already towards the end of the war. Might have been 44, but I think early 45. And he said to me, by the way, I've got something in. They didn't even say something amusing to tell you. So it's my unit, there is a committee of the cabinet about Palestine. Secret committee. Not known to exist. The chairman is Herbert Morrison. And the members of the committee are Oliver Stanley, who's Secretary of the Colonies. Amory, who's Secretary for India, who's a terrific pro-Zionist, somebody else and somebody else, and Dick Law representing the Foreign Office. And they get reports on the High Commissioner in Palestine, and they've decided that there will have to be partition. Partition, you see, was passed by Parliament,
yes.
In 36. Mm-hmm. But then sabotaged by the Foreign Office. I mean, there was a vote in Parliament to accept the Peel Commission's report on it.
Yes.
And that reminds me of something I want to tell you in that connection to invite them. Anyway, he said, as a matter of fact, they've decided, but they can't publish it now, it's secret, but they have to invite them. All right. Then when more telegrams kept coming in, saying the white paper will now be altered. So, Aline.
Are you working or talking?
I'm talking, certainly.
We're sort of talking, but now. I'm not going to torture you more than another 5 minutes.
No, but I must tell you. End of the story.
I wonder if you want to tell
me to. Are you alright? It is not. Doesn't matter.
Don't feel me.
I'm fine. It's sweet of you now. I'm tempted by a vodka, I must say.
I forgot this was on. It doesn't do any harm.
With
ice.
Please.
Yeah. But suddenly, I need to tell the story. I was very surprised, but I'm rather pleased.
Yes.
For everything to, I was a Zionist, and this was exactly what I wanted. Mm. On the right, but I knew. And then the secret committee, secret decision. When it was in favor of it, the Foreign Office protested against it, tried to stop it in every possible way, but the majority was in favor, and they finally decided that this would have to be the policy. So then I thought, oh well, I really must put a spike in the Foreign Office's gun quite innocently. Out of pure malice, I proceeded to report to the Foreign Office one of my messages saying, I hear from a Zionist source, you see, that there is this committee and this is what they've decided. In other words, they know. No use your going on saying rub into them. That's why I did it.
Yes.
Out of pure malice, my part. I just thought it was an enjoyable thing to do.
Yes.
That produced an explosion. The result was a terrible telegram from a man called Hankey, whom I knew, saying we told.
Sir Morris Hankey.
His son.
Yeah.
So we told this thing to Dr. Weizmann in secret. We didn't expect him to tell his followers, but of course, if people in Washington design the gossip, it'll go to the Arabs and everything will then blow up. Well, that is all. I didn't do anything further. So I was just rather pleased to perform this particular act.
Delicate.
I've tried to convey to them that it's no good sending these formal telegrams when the other thing is already known.
Mm.
Weizmann, no doubt, told Gilbert, no doubt he shouldn't have, but still he did.
Mm.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
That I did quite legally. I mean, as if one hears this interesting piece of gossip, one reports it.
Oh,
it's part of my business.
Absolutely.
There was something else I was going to tell you before in that connection.
In connection with Peel.
Yes. One of the things Weizmann said to the Peel Commission is one of the arguments for Zionism which can be used to Jews who were rather against it by me.
Mm.
And that was in London when in 1946 he appeared for the Peel Commission in London, not in
Palestine.
And I was told about this by Coupland, who was the one that commission,
yes.
With my colleague at Old Zones,
yes.
Who was rather pro-Zionist.
Yes.
The only one of the commission. However, he wrote the report, because he was a literate one, not a good writer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said that Weizmann told them, an Irishman, about 2 months before, he threw a pistol at the feet of a horse on which was seated King Edward VIII, Prince of Wales. The pistol didn't go off, the horse didn't bolt, nothing happened, the man was arrested, pistol was removed, and the episode led to nothing.
Yeah.
Just threw a pistol like that. Madman, right. Weizmann said, no, this episode happened. It was an Irishman who did it. The Irish in London were not nervous. Nor were they anywhere. Supposing I say to you, it had been a Jew who'd thrown this pistol, every Jew in England would have trembled. That's what I mean.
Yes.
That's why they have to have a country. It's rather powerful.
Yes.
Rather well done.
Yes.
True.
Yes.
What he said was entirely accurate.
Yes.
I mean, they live on the edges of things. They always think they're being looked at and suspected, and they're not quite trusted. And therefore, if any Jew does anything wrong, all the other Jews are guilty in some way.
Yes.
They feel responsible.
That is very good.
You see? That's what I mean. That's the story I remembered.
Mm.
Yes.
You always called him Mr.
Dr. Weizmann.
You always called him Dr.
Never hired.
You never called him the Chief.
Never. I hated that. They all called him the Chief.
Yes.
Chief even. Not the Chief. Chief. Thank Chief says, Mrs. Weizmann never used, because she was Russian.
She never used the.
Never used the.
Yeah.
Chief says. Chief doesn't like
and
that.
And you never referred to her as Vera. You always referred
never,
to her
never,
as Mrs.
Never, never. I was very formal in that way. Great friend as I was.
Yes.
I was perfectly formal.
Yes.
Dr. Weitzman to me. I didn't, people called him Chaim and so on. I thought that was improper.
I wonder in the end of the day whether you liked her much.
I got on with her. Like her too strong. She was a very artificial, rather false lady. False character, in many ways. Snobbish, and wanted to show off, and not very sincere, and she was very much disliked by in Israel to begin with, until he died. Then she became Lenny's widow.
Yes.
Then she became grand and so on. Yes. And everyone looked up to her. She suddenly realized the only position she could have is as his widow. She didn't exist otherwise. Yes. Otherwise she looks like playing bridge in London. Well, that's what she did. Met with a rich Jewish friend or others, played bridge and behaved like a... No, I felt about it. She was like a Russian... I'll tell you what she was like. She was like a Russian colonel's lady in Paris.
Yes.
With a little dog and a new book from the lending library every week. That's what she was like.
Yes.
It's completely...
Like a figure out of Bunin.
Yeah, but I mean, totally unrelated to him and Zionism,
yes,
and the Jews. I mean, she was stuck to him because, yes, she adored him.
We're talking about
Vera Weitzman.
We're talking about Vera Weitzman. And
oh, yes, I
heard. Question, did I like her?
What did you
I didn't
think
exactly
her?
Like her. I got on with her.
Why
so did you?
Knockabout or a fun sort of girl.
She was very snobbish.
Seriously.
And very snobbish, rather artificial.
Yeah, I didn't
and rather false. She wasn't very genuine.
Well, just being not very
serious. No, I tell you, she was like a white Russian lady in Paris.
Yeah, you know, rather amiable and amusing. I don't know.
Would it be accurate to say, because your letters, both of your letters say this, that effectively your honeymoon was in Rehovot?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But after your marriage, you went...
It wasn't the day after the wedding. Who are we talking about? I'm talking about the wrong person.
I meant Vera Weitzman.
You know what I was... I'm quite nice.
Who were you talking
about? I don't want to tell you. I didn't know something quite different. And it had not nowhere near the name or anything. I won't even tell you.
No. I did how awful.
With my brain.
Well, let's go back to Vera Weitzman.
Yeah,
now, what did you think of? Now, what did you think of?
Like
what did you think of her?
What
I got on with her.
What was she like then?
Yeah, she was trying to pretend to be a grand lady, but she wasn't really.
That's what
yes,
I mean.
Sir.
I think.
Yes.
You see?
She wanted to.
That is all tough. But as I talk Russian to her, things are very easy. We chatted along very happily.
And I was thinking of something.
Whom can you be thinking of? Mrs. Solomon.
No.
Oh, Vera, because Vera.
Yeah, I said Vera, yes.
They're both called Vera.
Yes.
Both were called Vera.
Yes,
she was quite jolly, but you
she was very jolly. She was a large, fat, old crook.
She
was.
Was she?
Yeah, very jolly, very nice. Yes, she liked that name.
I'm right, you did say Vera, so I could have
thought. Yeah. That's quite right. No, and I'll tell you, we were on very cozy terms, but not exactly intimate.
Mm.
And I had this, he was certainly the greatest man I ever knew well. He was pretty ruthless and pretty tough as a character. But he forgave me for not coming to Israel. He didn't really persecute
me.
Was that no?
As I'm being very rude, I'm can I use your phone to call a cab?
Please, anything you like.
Why didn't you?
We have a man who might drive you.
No.
We have you, no. He won't mind.
No.
Casimira will take you.
No, that's...
Where do you want to go?
I've got to go back towards St. Anthony's.
Time is 7.
Yeah.
I think he'll take you.
No, not to dine at 7th Dynamite.
It'll take time for taxi to arrive. It'll take time. Wait, where is my wife? Well, she's the person to approach on this subject.
Would it be possible for Casimir to... Oh, well, get a cab.
I'm sure he would, but I mean, I'm just... If he's doing nothing else, he won't mind.
I'll do it this way.
You won't be all right.
Why didn't you write Weitzman biography?
What?
Why didn't you write Weitzman biography?
Because it's too difficult.
Yeah.
Too much for a job. Too much of a job, is all. I mean,
which is what I say about once a week.
No, I thought it was too much of a job. I mean, go to the Russian past, a million documents have to be read, all these horrible archives in Israel. And I didn't know a great deal. All I knew from 39 onwards. Everything else would have to be artificial, would have to be done on the basis of papers. They didn't know him for that. And he don't know that he had any influence on me, you know. You don't think all the things I believed about And he called Casimiro.
What are you doing?
Well, he wants to go to St. Anthony's.
I have
yes,
to go to St. Anthony's.
Yes.
Much easier.
Casimiro take you, of course.
That's what I thought.
Which am I?
Yeah, no, I can take you.
No, you're not taking
me. No, anyway. I bought some now because I was always told you must eat something. I'm sorry if I've got anything very interesting.
When do you have to be there by?
Well, I have to be somewhere for 7:30, so I've got...
And you would leave at 7:15, you wouldn't?
That'd be fine.
All right. Yeah. Yes.
You could. Looking for something better.
That's perfect.
Did you ever seriously contemplate a biography?
Are you
listening
here?
No.
No, I'm just working with my...
Yeah, I knew that I'd be approached. I was a natural person to approach. Crossmore was going to write one.
I spent the last 3 months in
the library. That never materialized.
Hmm. Reading all about...
There's a conversation in Crossmore and White Stone, which I know to be false. Crossman is a terrible inventor.
Are you an anti-Semite?
Yes.
What other people say?
Inconceivable.
Other people's biographies.
Yeah. Ben-Gurion could
have asked. Inconceivable that Weizmann would have asked the question.
The London Library.
Not that Crossman would have.
Oh, no, you don't. Oh, Crossman would certainly say yes. He's enjoyed doing that. No, no. No, but Ben-Gurion could have asked it. Weizmann never. Weizmann was always accused of being too pro-English, you see. His trouble with them, he became a kind of pit and kind of quizzling they looked on him.
Yes,
you see, I mean, they tried to not show him documents and circumnavigate him.
Yes.
And so on, he was not one of us. Too pro-English and not reliable. He did like the English very much.
Yes.
Certainly.
He comes out
what?
Terribly.
Who was the person about 2 or 3 days ago who said that you hadn't been contacted by you to ask?
Michael Brock.
Who's that?
We've done that.
The only thing
Jean
I can say
was the person. Jean expressed horror at the thought of Michael Brock. It would have been.
Well, the only thing I can plead in my defense is that my neglect is completely consistent in general. I've not interviewed very many people.
No,
yet.
No, quite. No, no, but he was. No, but he would like
files.
To be interviewed. Thank you. He would like to be interviewed.
Yes. Well, I would like to talk to him.
10 years with me. Think of that. We got on very well.
Hmm.
He's a very, very nice
he
man.
He adores you.
He's a very nice man.
Hmm.
What? We must also in general. And his wife. She's a very nice Scotch lady.
What are your plans in the summer? Are you here until September?
I'm up to here until the 14th of August.
And then you go to Salzburg?
Then we go to Salzburg. Then we're back the last week in August. As I would. Yes, I would. And then we go to Italy. Then you said you'd come.
Do you think I could?
Mm.
Easy. Certainly.
Why can't you come too?
You want to come too?
I'll tell you all sorts of things.
I don't too.
Meeting you is poor Bryony's reward for 6 months of utter, total, and complete slavery.
Yeah. Slavery.
London Library.
The London Library.
Me in the London Library.
Yeah, but I don't understand what you've got at the London.
I know I have a very intimate relationship with a photocopier.
Yeah.
And
there's endless amount of biographical reference to Isaiah in the memoirs of others, things like that. There are endless numbers of secondary sources, books, that I simply need dug up, and Bryony has been very good at it. Very good
I
at it.
I didn't know you had it. You've been quite active for 2 months?
Yeah, many months.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea of any of this. I'm very sorry to hear it. How awful for you.
Well, it's been an education. I've learned a lot about you.
It's a very nice place. I'm devoted.
Oh,
no, I love it.
It's
a wonderful institution.
And I had a wonderful few days up at the Jews College and Library.
What have they got? Something on me?
Oh, they have a lot on you. Well, no, not that much. Well, they have a lot on you. They have a file. But I was looking up Riga and Jewish history in Latvia. That was fascinating. They have some wonderful books.
When I got the Agnelli Prize in Italy, I was described in the newspapers as a leading Latvian philosopher. I am. There are no others. I was described as a leading Latvian philosopher.
Of course, yeah.
Pensatore Letone.
Yes. Much better than the Daily Telegraph, where you come out as leading Letonian.
That's pretty good. That's not a word at all.
Very good.
Leading a Letonian philosopher.
That makes you really incomprehensible. I was talking about you last night to...
Who didn't see?
Marty Peretz.
Yes, I knew him.
And Peretz and I were discussing the question about why you so heartily despise Hannah Arendt.
It's a well-known problem.
And he surmised that
it was partly because she was associated with kind of sort of a Dwight MacDonald partisan circle that had that was very, very anti.
I was very.
And I thought that was too.
Too the opposite.
Complex.
The opposite is the truth. I was very much in with this particular circle.
All right.
They were, of course, anti-yes, but that didn't disturb me in the least.
Right.
No, this is just false. I mean, the point is that I knew Dwight MacDonald not say all that well, but
yeah.
Certainly Maya Shapiro and Philip Rav and,
yeah.
and what's her name, Mary McCarthy.
Yes.
Although I knew them all in 1941
yes.
in New York.
Yes.
I met them through somebody.
Yeah.
And I got on very well with them all.
Yeah.
No, the partisan review. No, he wouldn't.
No, he wouldn't know anything. I mean,
no, he doesn't know nothing.
This was just to introduce the subject.
One of my worst men, I think.
You don't like
him.
What? Oh, you loathe him, yes. He's not a terribly nice man, no.
I've known him for 25 years. He was initially my tutor at Harvard.
Oh, I see.
I'm glad you call him Peretz. Peretz is what he likes to be called. But Peretz is his name. No, I'll tell you why, because his great-uncle was one writer of genius
yes.
in Hebrew and Yiddish.
Yes.
The only one. The rest are all inferior. Shalom Aleichem, all these nothing. He's very remarkable as a writer, and he is a great-uncle of some sort. He's certainly called Peretz. But
what about Arendt, sir?
Well, how can I explain it? It's always coming up. I met her originally for both personal reasons and intellectual reasons. I met her, I think, in New York in 1941. She was then conducting an affair with the Zionist, German Zionist, called, and he was the leader of the German Zionists. Forgotten the name, but I can remember it. And she was then working with Youth Aliyah and getting children to Israel and all that,
right.
in Palestine. She appeared to be a Zionist. He certainly was. I mean, he was a prominent Zionist.
Yeah.
I mean, his whole life was that of a Zionist leader.
Yeah.
And she appeared on very intimate terms with him. And in fact, as I later discovered, they did have a jolly affair.
Yeah.
I didn't form any opinion of her then, but I have a natural prejudice against German Jews, I have to tell you. Unless they're particularly nice or particularly good, I tend to take against them.
Very incriminating stuff.
Exactly. I regard them as pompous, pedantic, humorless, heavy, and very usually not all anxious to be Jews. I always believed that if Hitler had not been anti-Semitic, he would have won the war, because all these scientists would have worked for him.
Oh, yeah.
And all the German Jews would have become pro-Nazi easier than a couple of communists might not,
yeah.
but the rest would. Anyway. That was it. Then, but 2 years later, during the war, I don't think I saw her again.
We saw her with Bob Silvers in that coffee shop.
Much later.
Yeah.
By that time, I already hated her. But by then, the next time I saw her was when I was having flu at Harvard in 49 or 51, one of those. Then, when Arthur Schlesinger brought her to see me, he wanted to call me, and she is with her. And she then began saying, she then made a violent attack on Israel, Zionism, building.
Right.
A violent attack on the ground that they were oppressing Arabs. Well, something what she said, but she said, I think it was a particular,